Welcome to our guests today, all the way from Cincinnati, Ohio. And they are also part of the camp programs this year, both in the preteen and teen. I just wanted to share that as well. We had our teen camp this year. Mr. Schultz kind of woke me in. I wasn't planning on that. We needed some extra help, and I said, sure, I'm planning to help. I didn't realize it, but I forgot what I was missing. And it's been quite a few years since I had done the teen program. And it's a little bit tiring after the preteen camp. So I opted out. I said, well, somebody else can do that. It's a time, obviously, from those years as 13 to maybe 18 years old. You probably get a little bit more, I'll call it drama, than you do with the preteens. You don't have that 6 to 12 drama. You get to the teen years, and it's just more drama. I think it's a natural thing. I'm not saying that in a bad way. I think people are still figuring things out, trying to understand how to deal with relationships. You don't always feel good about yourself. I remember those years going through high school. I thought my arms were so skinny, I always wore my coat. It's interesting how people will deal with things like that. Sometimes I would sit up on a stairway and eat my lunch instead of going to the cafeteria because I just didn't want to be ridiculed. You know, just that's what I thought about myself at the time until I started cutting through. And that could be mean years, too, high school. Somebody's always looking. There are groups of people that will put you down. And, you know, just learning how to deal with that. And so I try to pass on to our teens, you've got access to God, too. You can pray about those things and ask God to help you through those trying times. So maybe those that are antagonistic against you, maybe actually start to like you a little bit. You can develop some friendships and figure out how you can work your way through that. So I understand that part. But being a part of that program, I want to let you know, I've asked sincerely many times for the prayers of God's brother for safety, for the weather, for the success of the program. And once again this year, that's all I've seen. I've got some specific examples now because I was there. So being a part of that program and not being a camp director, I just forgot that it was going to be maybe a little bit easier because this time I don't have all the paperwork. I just go there and be part of the program. One of my hardest things this year was I was over the flag football and speedway. And I really didn't know how to play speedway, and I'm supposed to referee it. And thankfully, God provided me with a young man from England that knew how to play speedway. And so he goes, you know something? I don't know how to play flag football, so maybe you can kind of do that, and I'll help out with speedway. I'm going, oh, this is great. So I learned a little bit more about speedway. Now, beyond that example, how do you fit our camp theme, discernment training to heart, in the speedway and flag football? And that's one of the most fun things that I had at camp this year. Discernment. So I had some girls that came on the first time playing flag football. Most of them didn't ever play flag football. In fact, they certainly let me know that. We don't know how to play flag football. And so what do we do? Now, I could have said, well, let's just sit down and talk the whole time, and we won't play flag football. But I said, okay, we're going to play flag football. I organized, had the counselors organize them into a couple of teams. Now, who's capable of playing quarterback? Which quarterback? It's the one that throws the ball to somebody. And some actually didn't know about, can you throw? I think I could throw the ball. So practice with someone throwing the ball. And I go, you throw the ball pretty good. And they did well. Some go, well, I can't catch it. I don't know how to catch it. So I might call out their name. Hey, Melissa. Yeah, here. I threw the ball. She caught it. I go, you can catch the ball. Look at that. It really works. You can do it. I was surprised at how many touchdowns that the girls were getting. And so I would go into the huddle when somebody would make a good play, and even the smallest ones that are out there, they're the fastest. It's very interesting. You had some bigger ones out there. Oh, wow, they can play football and they can catch. What about these little ones? Just give them the ball and let them use their legs. They were down there like that. It was so fun being able to watch that. So the discernment part, I had the opportunity to now go into the huddle. So the girls would huddle to maybe make their next defensive play, while the other girls were kind of storming up with an idea of what they were going to do. And I go, okay, now think about this. Discernment. They did this. They made this play. What do you think they're going to do next? And all of a sudden, the wheels start turning. So you've got to inject that within. What are they going to do? Now, they just made a good play there with that person. Do you think they're going to kind of think, hey, that worked before, let's just do it again? Or are they going to come up with something else? Well, obviously, I know we're a nonprofit organization, so I didn't have any idea what they were going to do. But I did put the wheels in motion. Well, maybe you ought to cover that person so the same play doesn't go on. And then you bring it up to life, don't you? That's just football. But guess what? This stuff is going to happen in life. It's going to be life's experiences. How are you going to react to this? What are you going to do here? Offensive strategies, defensive strategies throughout life. What are you going to do? It was wonderful. I tell you what, as far as the weather goes, I remember a time Mr. Winter was in there giving his Christian living class. We normally had those after lunch, about 45 to 50 minute classes. And I noticed that it was raining. Now, it was a little dry there, so even the roads were a little bit dusty. We had rain all around us, it seemed, but it was a little dry there at camp. I noticed during Mr. Winter's Christian living class that it was raining pretty steady. Not hard at all, but just a steady rain. I said, As soon as he finished his Christian living class, the rain was gone. They all went out and participated in their activities. So we had another day, another Christian living class. I noticed it was raining. Steady kind of rain, not a whole lot, but I know it once again, as the Christian living class was over, and it went up. And so my assistant and I went out to the football field, and we had two canopies out there that you could stand under. We had a water table there so we could take some breaks and be in the shade. It could get a little bit hot sometimes in the summer, but overall the mornings were beautiful. Afternoons would get a little bit hot, but we normally didn't have those scheduled for the late afternoon. But this time we got out to the field under the tents, and it started raining a little bit more. What are we going to do about this? Very interesting. Are we going to have to cancel the class? And as those girls came down in the rain, some of them wearing some ponchos, as soon as they stood foot on the field, it stopped raining. That was it. So I'm thinking, huh, we've got clouds, cumulus clouds that were just coming over, beautiful big clouds, and in the distance, there it was, the thunderstorm that you could hear rumbling in the background. And it just stayed. It stayed. While all the other clouds, it stayed. And it seemed to rain everywhere around us except the camp. That was our camp this year. I wonder why we had such good water and safety and protection. I wonder if the prayers of God's people are that effective. I wonder if God cares that much about our kids having such a good time. I think so. I don't want you to, Esther, ever underestimate your prayers for God's people, for these camp programs. That's all I've heard this year was success. Wonderful programs. The Texas program was its first. If you see the accord, there'll be a little update from Mr. Horchuk. I actually hope that you'll actually watch that. We watched that in London, Kentucky. And it talks about our brethren over in Africa. The four women that are there, one of their sisters, the one that can't see, the other one that's paraplegic. I believe she's paraplegic. My father, but when she's paraplegic. Because I know this is the one that she goes 4 kilometers in a wheelchair with her arms. When I see that, I don't want to ever complain about going to church services or maybe the traffic that we get and the things that they go through on the Sabbath walk that Mr. and Mrs. Horchuk took. They saw these farmers coming down and going into town with oxen and the carrier with the corn and maize. That's their living. They don't have trucks going to and fro. You know, and the things that they eat and have to put together just for survival, it gives you a different perspective. And those that are our brethren, over there on the other side, they're God's people as well. And here we are over here, sometimes forgetting, but just so easily to take that for granted, sometimes how spoiled we can get sometimes. And that tended to be the nature, wasn't it, of the Israelites? Things would start going good, they would forget God. And he always told them, please don't ever forget what I've done for you. And so it's interesting, as we come together and talk about these things, hopefully we'll never forget, because the times are getting worse and they seem to be getting short. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that today, so I'll just make the one other announcement. Obviously, you can see the prayer requests on the bulletins that we have as well. Don't forget those. We will be having the activity tomorrow. Ms. Schultz says you can arrive right around noon and stay on till it stops. So there's no really end to it, just people get tired and want to go home. So anyway, we look forward to the fellowship tomorrow. That's been planned. But we can certainly pray, keep praying. I actually hope that, I don't know if that will be the case, all she feels, but I certainly hope Natasha and the kids will come. And I remember I talked to Benny and Jennifer Cox, because I remember when they went through it, they chose to come to services and to Winter Family Weekend. I think it was very helpful. I was very grateful for that. So we pray and hope that somehow they can be strengthened, you know, at this time, and especially after all that they've gone through. Frankly, I thought it was a miracle a couple of weeks ago when I saw Russell here. He was not supposed to come. He's supposed to be living. So, you know, God is there. We don't always understand and know that, but we can certainly be stronger for it, not weaker for it. And so I'll end with that as far as the announcements. What I'm going to do right now is play a little clip, a very short clip. This is called, probably some of you may remember it, but some of you may not. This goes back to 1980, when the USA Olympic hockey team beat the Russians in what was called the Miracle on Ice. So I'm going to play a short clip. At the very end, watch for a name badge you'll see on one of the jerseys. The Americans are in the white jerseys. So you'll probably see my friend. His name is Mark Wells. I'll talk to you a little bit more after I play the clip. And if you want to run the clip, please. Thank you.
Oh, he come outside. It'll be American in 55 seconds, but Mikhailov has the puck. Mikhailov sweeping in, out in front, backhander goes wide. I think Frank might have to take this piece of it. Mikhailov, back out to Peter Legimov. 43 seconds remaining. Morrow, kicking to the board that comes back to center ice. 37 seconds left in the game. Petrov with it, the American on top for the big, long shot. Frank able to get a piece of it to sweep it away. 28 seconds. Lebron, insane, Karlamov. Bringing up the American in the end. Morrow is back there. Now Johnson, 19 seconds. Passing over to Ramsey. They let it off. It's still on Ramsey. The final hand is there. The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to shoot. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe it, Derek?
It's interesting. I don't know if, how many of you have experienced that kind of jubilation, but because I played most of the time, we won state championships, we won a national championship in 1970. I remember the kind of piling on and the jubilation as you threw off your gloves and your helmets and all that. These were young kids that were just, they were not supposed to win this game. They had played previously exhibition games against the Russians and lost by scores of 15-3. I mean, the Russians were just killing. Because at this time in 1980, the Americans couldn't play professional players. The Russians were professionals. They had played extensively in different countries. These guys were seasoned veterans playing against the youngest team that had ever been put together before. There was never a younger team than these guys right here skating. And this coach, I didn't show you a little bit more, but this coach just walked off the bench and back into it, shows in the movie, just walked kind of back into the tunnel because he knew it. He knew it was a miracle. But to see what he went through and understanding and knowing what he would have to take this team through to even get to the point, and it still had to be a miracle. He practiced these kids until they threw up. In fact, the assistant coach had to tell him, you got to go easier on them. And Herb Brooks would say, I can't. I know what they're going to be facing. And even after that, they needed this miracle. That goalie, sometimes I've seen a goalie that would be a mediocre goalie, but something would happen sometimes, but there's just nothing that would get by him. And Jim Craig, I remember, it's just, he played, you saw, the play was normally not in the Russians' end, it was in the American end. The Russians were just relentless, and this goalie would save it. And toward the very end, it just, you saw what happened. It was just something that was just incredible. And to this day, it goes down to the biggest sports event, one of the most watched, one of the most impacted. in 100 years of American sports. And just to see the story behind it, obviously I can relate a little bit more. As you saw those guys being checked against the boards, you go, ouch, that had to hurt. The importance of all the equipment that got tied in. So when I'm reading the Bible, I'm understanding that. What I'm saying is, do all we understand this too? Sometimes what I think that we're going through now is God is taking us through some very, very difficult and hard times because He knows what we're facing. And I brought up last time, as I brought up 3 points on understanding our adversary, and I know that coach that had to be watching that Russian team, watching all of their other games and trying to expose their weaknesses and trying to expose their strengths and see what they could do to kind of resist and do the best that he could do and still need the miracle. And I find ourselves kind of in the same thing. You know, God is strengthening us beyond sometimes what we even think we can handle, and yet he promises he won't give us something that we can't handle. Sometimes we go, we can't. And God says, here, catch. And we catch it. And he goes, you can do it. You keep saying you can't, but you can. You can do it by my power. That's what we need. That's what we need to understand that we need. We also need to understand our adversary and what he's doing. And sometimes people can start falling asleep because of all of the other things that are happening out there today. We can get sidetracked and forget the real battle that we're fighting. We think the battle is between the Democrats and the Republicans. We think it might be one person versus another person. And I keep looking and going, where is the footprint? Are we discerning too? How important was this theme this year for our kids to understand and start to see the battles that they're fighting are the same battles that we're fighting? Because it's the same adversary. Are we teaching them a warning of that? What are you looking for? What are you watching? So the last time here, I brought up 3 points. Three. It was just three. There's more. There's more. I want to cover a couple more today. But do you remember what the first ones are? Do you understand the adversary and how he works? If you remember, he's called the deceiver, isn't he? That was one. Revelation works. He deceives the entire world. So as I step back, what does this mean for us today? He deceives the whole world. The whole world. Most of the world does not understand what God has given for you and us to understand. That's just the way it can be. Many of us early on got tested with that. Oh, sure, that's easy to understand. I'm going to put it on a nice plate and give it to my relatives or our friends, and it would go right over their head before we understood. God's got to open up your mind to understand this. But also, see, deceives. So a lot of people have been deceived out there. And as I'm watching some of the programs and seeing some of the news items that come out, and saying, you know, how many people are really deceived out there? You know, when names are called to our president, that he's this or this or this, 90% of the people buy it. Is that what he really is? When you look at the facts and other things behind what's been done, you look at other areas when some people will say, well, we just want to be non-aggressive, and then they'll call upon, tell somebody to stab a Republican in the head or somebody else. Well, then you're not aggressive? Who's behind this? Who's the deceiver? When you see the footprint, watch the footprint. You're going to know who your adversary is. What about when Christ was confronted by Satan? What did it say in Matthew chapter 4? It called him the tempter, didn't it? The tempter. So we see that Satan tempts. How does he tempt? He's going to make something bad look good. And so I step back and think about this. I've mentioned this before to this congregation. Why are our hospitals and clinics so filled, packed, that they're making more hospitals? This is supposed to be a civilized society. And I brought one example. But what about your watermelons? I'm looking for a seeded watermelon. I'm actually looking for ones with seeds. Everywhere I go, I'm seeing seedless watermelons. Now, I have not looked extensively into this. I'm just trying to bring it up. So I'm not totally sure yet, but I find it very interesting that God has made fruit and other things to have seeds. Somehow we've engineered it to where it doesn't have seeds. Really interesting. People go, oh, it doesn't have seeds. So there go your seed spitting contest, for one thing. No more seed spitting contest. But anyway, somehow, something of convenience, I'm going, but it's supposed to, I thought supposed to have seeds? Well, if they're changing the genetics, is it changing something else? Is that food still okay? Is it still good? I'm not sure. But I know the pattern throughout the years. When I first started learning about food, I remember the white stuff. Everything white was supposed to be pure and clean. White rice, white bread that would stick to the roof of your mouth. I certainly remember that. But it was white, so it was pure, so it was good for you. Then I found out, no, it's not really, because they're taking everything good out of it and leaving you with something that absolutely has no nutritional value at all. That was the beginning. And now I keep watching these things, and I'm saying, why is it that we are trying to make things better and we're not? And here's the end result I see. Hospitals that are filled, clinics that are filled with sick people. And then you go to third world countries where they don't have a lot. They're eating what grows out of the ground. They don't have all the stuff that we have. Very interesting, isn't it? Where's the footprint? The deceiver, Satan the devil, making something look good. And we face it every day. Every single day, you and I have choices. And you can go, well, you know, I've heard the reasonings. Well, everything's bad for you anyway. So what's the difference? We're all going to die, so let's just go on. Yeah, you want to keep being in the hospital with everybody else, waiting in lines in 30 minutes to even try to find a parking spot? That's where we're at today. I'd just like us to think about that, because it's up to you. It's up to you to look and to have that discernment and to see the footprint of what Satan is doing. Is it easy? It's hard. It's hard. I understand that. It's hard to do the extra work. It's hard to do the extra research. You get tired. I know that. And how can anyone find? You got to keep looking. You got to keep making progress and seeing how Satan works. He's going to tempt. He's going to tempt in many different ways. He's going to deceive in many different ways. But what was the third one? He's also known as what? The accuser, isn't he? Can you turn the TV on and go without somebody accusing someone, finger pointing somewhere? And yet those same attitudes, by the way, have bled over into the Church of God at times. They've been there. I've seen it. You've witnessed it. You've seen it. At times I said, thank you so much, God, for helping to make it so clear on the way things that shouldn't operate that way. Some people would come up to me and say, I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to hear it. My mouth would drop. I go, are you kidding me? You don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear anything. Nope, because things are comfortable for me right now. I don't want to go into making, this stuff has happened before, I don't want to go into making difficult decisions. I don't want to have that. Don't want to see it. Don't want to look. There's the monkeys. Hear no evil. See no evil. Speak no evil. I shake my head and go, no, I feel bad. We can't do that. God said, never said this was going to be an easy ride. And every time I see us confronting another difficult situation, I'm saying, there it is again. How do we deal with it? Are you going to finally go, I'm done with it? That's where Satan wants us to go. I say, no, you know what we have to do? We have to be stronger. We see the testimonies that are given before us. Some of the things that we've gone through, when you look back, anybody go through the situation that Job has? That was a real testimony to us. We'll go through some other ones as well, but I want to go through a couple of the other points and understanding and looking at the way our adversary works. The fourth point, when you get accusation, deception, tempting, those are all revealed in the scripture. This is how God looks at the adversary. But God has also allowed this adversary to go around, hasn't he? He's allowed this adversary to go around and test us. You could easily put him away, and eventually he will. You know what the incredible thing is? When I look at this, maybe it is to you. As we know in the future, there's going to be 1,000 years that Satan will be bound, right? And he won't be allowed, and his demons will not be allowed to roam this earth. So we got 1,000-year period. After the 1,000 years are expired, it says he's loosed for a short time. My jaw drops at how quickly he is able to turn entire countries and peoples against God's way after 1,000 years. You know what that tells me? He is good. He is good at what he does. And you better be very sharp and understand the spiritual battle that we're fighting, because he will take you down if you think you can stand without the power of God. I'd like to title my sermon today, Miracle on Ice. Miracle on Ice. We've got a miracle ahead of us, but it awaits us. It's on ice, isn't it? Kind of proverbial that way. It's a miracle waiting to happen. But you know, in order for that to happen, like I told you, these guys went through workouts and workouts and workouts and workouts and workouts. I remember that. In 1968, this was 1980, 1968, my team played at the same place, Lake Placid, New York. My centerman was Mark Wells, and we won the tournament then. In fact, that entire year, we only had 2 lines. Normally, a team has 3 lines. We had 2 lines. But our coach conditioned us, and I remember going from the goal, back and back again, down and back again, do it again, down and back again, back again. We're trying to catch our breath, feeling sick, down and back again, working us on drills. We won 58-0-1 that year. We didn't lose a game. We were so conditioned and so used to working together that there's just nobody really that could beat us. I remember getting a note from Jim Lovell. He was, I believe, in Congress or somewhere within the government. Man that went to the moon. And he wrote a note for our team. I still have that certificate. And he said, though, he goes, on there, I remember the words he said, when the one great score comes to call against your name, he marks not how you won or lost, but how you played the game. I said, really good advice coming from now a politician, former astronaut. Very interesting, the views and the values we had at that time. My centerman that you saw, maybe you saw his name tag, won the Miracle on Ice. If you see him now, he was interviewed a few years ago, and his back went out on him, not from playing hockey, but from some work-related accident. And he had to sell his gold medal to pay for his medical bills. And now I saw him now skating on the ice. They named the rink, the arena back in St. Clair Shores, where I used to skate the Mark Wells Arena after him and his win. But I saw him skating. I mean, he doesn't look like anything but healthy, the player that he was back then. Of course, I went skating over here off of Block Road. I'm sure, I sure don't skate the same way anymore, too. It's kind of depressing sometimes. When you get out there and you're a little bit older, you can't do the same things anymore. Guess what? We're going to do something more. Better. All these things we see, it's going to be different. No more hurting, no more pain. We got a miracle waiting to come, but now we're going through training. And God knows. He understands what we have to face in order to make it. And even then, we need a miracle, don't we? Now, we already had one. We had one miracle already take place. We had Jesus Christ, who died, was resurrected. That wasn't the miracle. You know what the miracle was? He was resurrected. That was the miracle. You know what the next one is? You and I are being resurrected, too. It's called miracle. It just awaits us right now. But the training program will be there because God is going to provide that training ground so we never fall or don't fail. So it won't be an issue to us. We're confronted by the deceiver, by the accuser, by the tempter. No, I see that. Not going there. Not doing that. How easy it was back when we were called. You know, here's the identifier right here. You bring it up to today. We had a lot of people, hundreds of people. In Knoxville, thousands, you might say, in some of the bigger cities, Cincinnati, huge. Cincinnati North, Cincinnati East, Cincinnati West, Cincinnati South, Cincinnati Central. 5 churches, a couple thousand people. You don't have a couple thousand people anymore, do you, in Cincinnati? Well, if you have a few hundred, maybe. That's the remnant. That's what's left after God allowed the tempter, the deceiver, the accuser to come on board. Had him come in and said, by the way, all the stuff that you've been taught, it's not true. Over 90% of the people and ministry bought it, by the way. Over 90% bought it, gone. That baptized me, gone. leads all the other stuff when I came into the church and started learning about that, started learning about the Sabbath day. Proved it. I was told, prove it to myself, so I looked and I proved it. Last time I was here, one of the last times, I said, is there any time when the Sabbath is not a holy convocation? Is there any time? We said the Sabbath is a holy convocation. So I better be there. God commands it. He didn't say, well, now, yeah, there are only two reasons, I said, that at least it's clarified in the Bible. You're sick or the way's too far for you. Understand that. But it's a holy convocation. I go, well, but you know, it's been a busy week. Tired. Just tired. You know, what if I'm on the ice? Coach says, down and back. Coach, you know, I'm tired. I had a rough week. You know, it's just been hard. He wouldn't have made it on the team. He wouldn't have made it on the team if he had that attitude. You know what? God says the same thing. You want to be like that? If it doesn't change, if repentance is out, Revelation says, I'll remove your candlestick. And I'll give it to somebody else who wants it. When I saw that young guy that I played, he was probably one of the last ones to make it on the team because he was so short. He's very short. But when I saw him, you know, busing at a restaurant, what are you going to do? He goes, I'm going to strive for the other team. And he made it. He made it. That's hard. So to even make the Olympic team, but he made it. He wasn't played very often, but he won a gold medal with his team. Very interesting to see and relate those now to what's going on with God, who's got someone he's calling to be first fruits. And to be a first fruit, it's not going to be lollygag. It's not going to be, he knows what he's doing to prepare us. Sometimes he'll take us to the very limit on what we can handle. And then all of a sudden he'll give us some relief. How many times have you and I been through this? How many times have somebody said, though, I've had enough, and they gave up? I thought it says, he that endures to the end, endures to the end. Not endures and then poops out. It doesn't say that. So we have to have sometimes messages that reaffirm this is what we're doing. When the hardest times hit, we got to go back to remembering what God is doing. He's still there. He's not left us. He's not turned his head. That would be ridiculous thinking. But sometimes that's the attitude. Satan wants to get in there and plant those attitudes in. He doesn't care about you. He's off on some vacation. Don't listen to what he has to say. I'm telling you, don't be putting up with this. You can live life and live it happier than what you're doing here. Well, those are total hopeless. You know, he's also known as a liar, isn't he? John chapter 8, let's look at verse 43. John 8, verse 43. You know, by the way, the adults here, we've been through some really very difficult things. You know, some of the kids I know, when some of the first changes started to occur, some would say it was in the 90s, it was actually back to 1987. A lot of people didn't get that information, but the doctrine on healing was being changed at the time to kind of say, God's really not so interested in your physical healing. It's all about spiritual. And I remember when my father-in-law said baloney and they tried to transfer him and retrain him, and he wouldn't accept it. They always believed in the healing power of God through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and the stripes, because he really didn't have to have stripes, did he? If it was simply the loss of blood, you know, back in the Old Testament, they used to slit the sheep's throat. And I had heard, I was never dressed, field dressed an animal before, but that was the most painless way to slay an animal, was to just slit its throat. They can't feel it. And the loss of blood just kills them. So that's what happens. So if that's the case, why didn't you just slit Christ's throat? If it just had to be the blood and the death of Jesus Christ. It says, by his stripes we're healed. He understands pain, probably more than many, because of what he had to suffer, along with the humiliation and being tortured, that you couldn't even recognize him. That's how bad it was. You know, the movie portrayed, even the director said, I it was bad, and it was. He goes, it wasn't really like it was because it said you couldn't recognize him. It was so bad. That's what our Savior suffered to understand our sicknesses and our infirmities. and our pains. And he watched that stuff and he healed people, not only that had physical disabilities, but that had mental illnesses as well, casting demons out of people, crying for people. Or why? Why are you living this way? Change your life. Live according to my way and you'll be able to live and be happy. He told the same story back in the Old Testament. They just didn't follow it because you have the liar following right up. Go, don't listen to what he says. Watch what everybody else does. They're having a blast over there. Are we having a blast in the United States today? You look at our bigger cities like L.A. and they're going, we're in a crisis point. We're crisis. And now we know what many of the focus is, the environmentalists. They don't want to exterminate. They want to get rid of the rat poison because they're animals too. So they don't want to kill the rats. So let the rats infest now where the homeless people are, and now all the bubonic plague and everything else will spread throughout. That's a really smart one. Who thought of that one? Somebody must have been deceived because that's not even in the right thinking. And yet that's what we see every day. And you're going to see more and more and more and more. That people clap. Yeah, now we have it when you bear a baby, you can kill it even when it's out of the womb. Boy, that's a good one, isn't it? Hey, we're all on board for that one, yay. That's insanity. Are we watching? Are we watching to see how serious this is? And seeing the need for God Christ to return and to change this thinking? We could do so much, but most of the preparation right now is for us. For God to prepare his church. He said in John 8:43, why do you not understand my speech? Because you're not able to listen to my word. You are of your father, the devil. And the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in truth because there's no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. That's where the footprint is when you see that. It's not these people. I see the footprint of Satan the devil manipulating people once again. It's insanity to do that, to be dishonest like that. And yet the Pharisees of Christ's time, the ones that had the law of God, conspired to murder Jesus Christ. Murder! That's how far Satan got them. The keepers of the law. And Christ knew their hypocrisy. He could wear robes all day. Bring it up to today. I saw ministers that had suits on, were pretty good speakers. But when it came down to the test, they didn't make it. They didn't make it. Many of my friends and my family, back in my church area, did not make it. And you know what? It was most of them. Most of them. Not some of them. Most of them. And he's not done. The fifth element we need to watch as well is murder. See that going all day. I just saw a news flash about Baltimore. They're just saying, you pay somebody enough, they'll just go kill somebody for you. It's rampant throughout our inner cities now. And of course they're blaming somebody else. Blaming somebody else. It's always blaming somebody else. As we just read in John 8:44, Satan is also a murderer. Can we commit murder without actually committing a specific act? Well, if you turn over to 1 John chapter 3, we can see here. 1 John chapter 3. First John chapter 3, verse 13 says, don't marvel, brethren, if the world hates you. So understand, we're at a breaking point here. I want to let you know that. I think most are watching this. If you get one party or another party in, we could be in really real trouble. Because there's a party that just hates anybody that would love God or profess God. They want to get away with the commandments. The ones that want to kill, that they'll justify, if they're justifying killing a baby, they'll justify killing anybody. This is where we watch it going. Do not marvel, brethren, if the world hates you. We know that we have passed from death to life because we love the brethren. He who does not love his brother abides in death. Whoever hates his brother is a murderer. And I've seen hatred in the church of God. I've seen it. Witnessed it. Why? God certainly allows it. Stories go. It says you're going to have a church, but there are going to be tares. There will be tares in the church. Then you experience it. Some don't want to see it. They want to witness it. They don't want to watch it. You've got to identify, understand what Satan is doing. Whoever hates his brother is a murderer. You know, no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. By this we know love because he laid down his life for us, but we also ought to lay down our lives to the brethren. See, that's the attitude that we're working toward. I question that from Revelation. I believe it was chapter 11 before. Here are God's people, the ones that acknowledge the blood of Christ, that acknowledge his sacrifice, and what it does for us. We're there. Okay, the next one was those that have the testimony. So it's not only understanding God's word, but we actually live by it. We believe in living by it. Yes. So you acknowledge the Sabbath day. Yes. And you also keep it. Yes. Some people say, well, I keep it in my heart. That's a great deception. Because how do you do that? How do you keep it in your heart? Well, I think about it from time to time. That's not keeping the Sabbath day. Thinking about it in your heart. It just doesn't. So you work your way through that one. Well, that's just not true. But it's a subtle way for Satan, because my neighbor bought that. She heard it from somebody who kind of bought that argument. So I keep it in my heart. So it's just, but it's not true. It's a lie. It comes from Satan. The third one is, they have the attitude, lay your life down. They've not loved their lives to the death. That's that third one. That's where we're going. That's where God is taking us. Because ultimately, in order to do that, you look at that, well, that one's really hard. That one's hard. Remember I said before, Matthew, he says, you can do all this and that's fine, but can you now pray for your enemies? I command you to bless those who curse you. Pray for your enemies. How? That's tough. Down and back, down and back, down and back. Don't tell me you can't do it. You can do it. It's only going to be through God. You can't do that yourself. Love to see somebody that can just normally pray for your enemies, bless those who curse you. That takes a higher power, doesn't it? To be able to do, but it's possible. Don't tell me that you can't catch that. Because God says, he throws you the ball. So you can do it. You can do that. But it's by the help and power of God. Is it hard? Yes, it's hard. We're not talking about working with feeble-minded people now. He wants to grow us to grow and be strong. That's why he provided all that equipment for us. It's the spiritual equipment that we've got to wear on a daily basis, not just once a week. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, and Paul tried to warn the people. And you can see all the epistles that brought out these warnings. And there's a warning going out to the people of God right now, a warning shot. Brethren, it's getting close. God's getting selective. He's saying, if you don't want this, I'm going to go out to the highways and byways and I'm going to look for somebody that wants it. I want somebody that wants this. And if you're not interested right now, I'm going to go find somebody who does. That's where, as you step back, it seems to be, that's where we're at. Are we taking this seriously or are we not? 2 Corinthians chapter 2. Verse 10, it says, now whom you forgive anything, I also forgive. For indeed, if I've forgiven anything, I've forgiven that one for your sakes in the presence of Christ, lest Satan should take advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. You are not ignorant of his devices. I just told you. I don't know if you could rattle the five back. I think you could if you thought about it for a minute. But think about your adversary. What's he like? I think there are enough scriptures in here to say this is the way he works. He's a liar. He's a murderer. He's a deceiver. He's an accuser. He's a tempter. Maybe more than that. Those are the five I could really define, that the Bible defines. Do you know who your adversary is? Are you able to face him? I think my answer would be, not without God's help. This is a very powerful, powerful human being, or spirit being. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Let's go a little bit farther here. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. And there was a concern here. Verse 2, he said, "For I am jealous for you for godly jealousy. For I have betrothed you to one husband, that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. But I fear that somehow, as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted from the simplicity that's in Christ. For if he who comes preaches another Jesus whom we have not preached, or if you receive a different spirit of which you have not received, or a different gospel which you have not accepted, you may well have put up with it. You might go ahead and accept it. It happened to the congregation that I was in the early 90s. Now, when I came to understand God, I know I prayed. I did pray before I even understood the truth that God unveiled. But I knew that there was a God. I knew that there was a Satan. So I know I wasn't praying to Satan. I just didn't know God as I came to know God. I came to know God the Father, and I came to know His Son, Jesus Christ. Not just Jesus, as most of the world professes, but I prayed to the Father. Why? Because that's what Christ instructed me to pray. So I pray to the Father. And I get the questions. Well, is it wrong to pray to Jesus Christ? Is it wrong? The Bible doesn't say it's wrong. But who did Christ say to pray to? So if you want to follow the instruction, do you want to get all soft-hearted and feel, well, you know, but if I don't pray to Christ, He's going to feel bad. No, He's not. He understands His Father. And He says, if you want something done, don't pray to me. My Father will get it done through me. See, He's included. He's not left out. He knows how it works. He prayed to the Father in Jesus' name, right? He's our mediator. You can't even get to the Father except through Jesus Christ. That's the truth. But all of a sudden, the emotion comes in. Oh, it's all, if you leave Jesus out, Jesus, you hear the word all the time. And it's really about the Father. That's who Christ came to reveal. It's really, in a sense, about both that family and then about us becoming a part of that God family that many people just don't understand. I know they haven't been open, but their minds open, but He's saying, don't forget this. The craftiness comes in. A God is what comes in. And He had to know the definition of the Greek word. Boy, it was the Greek. He had to know that. And I thought, if it was the understanding of the Greek, we don't have a Greek church, do we? So it was the understanding of Greek. How come we don't have more Greeks? This wasn't there. It was a false message. And if you see and understand and hold fast to the truth that you read for yourself and believe, then you don't let anybody deceive you and take you from it. That's where God is training us in this process. The simplicity that He leaves there. Okay, let's go to Ephesians 6 really quick. Ephesians chapter 6. So based on saying that, having gone through this, and I'm not going to go through the armor of God, I'm just going to touch briefly on some of the surrounding verses here. And hopefully with more understanding than we've had before now, as a result of understanding the battle that we fight. This was not even a comparison with the Americans looking at the Russians. Now, I didn't ask any of them. I didn't ask Mark, you know, what was it like? What was your mentality like when you faced these guys? You know, I do remember one game with him as my centerman in that two-line team that I was on back in 1968. We had a team come down from Canada, and they were called the Toronto Red Wings. These guys were fast. I don't know if we ever met such a fast team. You know what happened to us? We got faster. We just got faster. Because we never played a team like that. We're thinking, okay, they're playing fast, we'll just play faster. And we did. We won. But you know something? We were conditioned for that. You know, finally, when we had to put on the afterburners, we found that we had the energy. We had it. Now, same thing. Bring it up to today. When you see what we're going to have to face in the future, you think it's bad now? You think it's bad now? Read what the Bible says is going to happen in the future. It might make World War II and the concentration camps look like a youth camp. compared to what's going to be done in the future. Satan's going to unleash. But you and I can be ready. You and I don't have to fear. We don't have to be afraid about it. We know it's going to happen. Beast power is going to come on the scene. It seems close. Are we watching? Are we preparing? Are we getting ourselves ready? Will you be able to handle it? Here's the power that we face. This is what Paul was saying, finally, my brother, Ephesians 6, verse 10. Be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. It's called the whole armor of God, not yours, not mine. You can only do it by the help of God. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. That spiritual wickedness in high places is revealed sometimes. You know, if you go back to the book of Daniel, remember a message was being sent to Daniel, but it says the evil one resisted. Gabriel, who was a messenger of God, and Gabriel had to somehow wire whatever he did to call upon Michael to help him to get that message through. You know, the angelic realm battles against each other on occasion. For some reason, but we don't know, God allows that. You know, it says they disputed about the body of Moses. When I read that last time, I believe, when I was here, when they disputed about the body of Moses, that those the wickedness wanted to use the body of Moses. Why? As an idol. Everybody would be bowing to Moses. People bow to Peter. They don't realize, hey, by the way, yes, there are saints, but did you realize I don't have to die to be a saint? We're called saints now. If you're first fruit, if you have God's Holy Spirit, it says greetings to the saints. Not dead ones. You wouldn't have given a greeting because they couldn't read. They think they're in heaven. No, they're not. Now look at the truth so we understand it. We hold fast to it. But this is the way Satan operates. So take to the whole armor of God that you may be to withstand in the evil day. To withstand even in the evil day and having done all, to stand. And then it goes through those pieces of equipment. Let's go to Luke chapter 22. Luke 22 and verse 23. Luke 22, verse 23. So here's the growth process again. I hope that you do too. When I look back and saw my start, I can only evaluate my start because I don't know yours. But I know in my start, the things that I started learning, wow. You know, to understand about the day, then to understand about keeping the day, then to understand about the pagan holidays, and to understand about all the other truths as they came about, and then later on to understand even more the deeper things, a little bit more difficult issues. It wasn't difficult to stop eating unclean food. That wasn't hard. It wasn't really hard to start keeping the Sabbath day, especially when you were convicted that that was the day. But for some people today, the Sabbath day sometimes seems to be hard. Why? Well, because I got other stuff to do. Or I got this to do. Or I'm too tired. I'm just too tired. Well, can you be tired on Sunday? Can you find somewhere during the week to rest up? Because no matter what, if you come here and fall asleep, God would give you more respect for that. Than not coming. Just because you honor God by understanding and keeping, he says, keep the Sabbath, it's a holy convocation. Keep it holy. He didn't say, except if you're a little tired. So here they send us an invitation. They keep the Sabbath day, and we worship them, but I'm too tired to worship you. All right, guess what? I'm going to go find somebody who wants to worship me that respects what I have to say. See how dangerous it gets? Satan goes, you're tired. Stay home. Stay home. Don't come. You got other stuff to do? Yeah, don't worry. I know sometimes you have things that are a little bit more important than me. I understand that. Go ahead, do your thing. That's not how God operates. And somehow if you think different, then you're being deceived. If you could show me that says I'm tired or whatever else, And there are other things. That's just one area. There are other areas as well. When you see when God gives a command, he means it. And there are no ifs, ands, except the ones that Satan, the spiritual wickedness, puts in there. Once again, I understand too. I understand the body allows for sicknesses. So I don't want somebody to be sick and come here, and we've done that on occasion too. People want to come so bad, they'll come when they've got coughs or sicknesses, and then we spread those around. Shouldn't come then. You shouldn't come when you're not well. The Bible allows for that. Or for a long distance that you can't travel, and that might be different for different people at different times. So we have to understand some of those. But again, look at how Satan works and how he deceives. So this is a problem here. Christ is calling his disciples. What happens here, though, is any time as you go through school, we always had kind of the big guys. People gravitate toward the big guys because we got our big group now. We're the ones. But don't mess with us. We're the ones. Remember, that goes back to American Graffiti. For those of you who saw that, there was a group called the Pharaohs. And they were the guys. Probably the most insecure guys. And that's why they got together as a group of guys. Here we're all this insecurity. We're all the guy that has all this insecurity that makes us secure. And we even have coats to show, jackets to show, calling themselves Pharaohs. Now we're something. We're somebody. Well, disciples have kind of the same attitude. Hey, this guy heals. He does miracles. You work with him. Don't mess with us. Until Christ died. Then they hid. Talk about insecurity, huh? You would think that they would be the strongest. God was training them. Yes, understood it. So, here, verse 34. But there was a rivalry among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest. And so he taught them a lesson. He said, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. But not so among you. On the contrary, he who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and the one that governs as he who serves. For who is greater, he who sits at the table, or he who serves? Is it not he who sits at the table? Yet I am one among you who serves. But you are those who have continued with me in my trials, and I bestow upon you a kingdom, just as my Father bestowed one upon me, that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, sit on the throne judging the 12 tribes of Israel. He had a working ground for them. He was going to take them. And he was going to give them the strength to do it, but he was going to take them through a lot of trials. Most of them died for it, by the way. Most of them did. They couldn't at first. Remember what Peter said? I'll lay down my life for you. Christ was so merciful. Peter, here's what's going to happen. He knew. He was so patient with Peter. Then they came through it, and then Peter did. After he received the strength of the Holy Spirit. He did do it. He could catch it. But God took him through a lot of things to get to that point, did he? Does the same for us today. He's not a respecter of persons. That's not going to change. Is it hard? As I remember doing those laps and aching and my breath and burning, my lungs were burning. Trying to Red Wings come. No problem. We got it. We can handle it. We were trained. When you see these things coming on the scene in the future, no problem. We got it. I'm not even worried about it. Why? Because you've got a relationship going on with God. There is no fear through the Spirit of God. It's going to happen. God could deliver me, or he might not. Either way, it doesn't matter. This is what I'm doing. Not receiving the mark. This is the way I'm going. Have at it, folks. Because guess what? I see this future here. Did you see the rejoicing that they did? It's so fun when he saw these players that were beside themselves. They beat the Russians. I mean, the celebration. Guys, I mean, some of the guys, you see their faces, they're just like, we beat the Russians. And by the way, that was the semifinal game. They still had to beat Finland to actually win the Olympics, that they were winning gold medal, which they were trained. They now beat them. Imagine the mentality. Imagine the guys sitting there in the dressing room going, you know, here's Finland. We just beat the Russians. Can we beat Finland? You better believe we can. I bet those guys, I bet that they didn't let down, I bet Herb Brooks did not let them down one iota. He goes, you guys just beat these guys. Don't you dare get a big head. This is a good team. And it wasn't, they didn't blow them out by any means. I think it was 5-3 that they finally won the game. So it wasn't easy. But you know, Bring it up to today. No, let's bring it down up to tomorrow. Here's what I see. You see that celebration there? Can you imagine ours? You see what it says here? That you will sit at my table and eat and drink in my kingdom? Well, we're going to have hopefully a very nice time tomorrow with the fellowship, with the eating. I'm sorry, it's not going to be any more like this. We're going to try to make it maybe like that. But this one, can you imagine being at the kingdom and at the table? That means you're a spirit being, right? That means no more aches, no more pains, no more sorrow. Only sitting there and rejoicing at that time, knowing what lies ahead for you and I. Now, guess what? It's not, what position do you have? That's by the wayside. Now, guess what? What can we do to help? What can we do to serve? And this is our miracle. Wait here. This is what lies before us. But you know, it's going to take work to get there. It's going to hurt sometimes. It's going to be painful. God never promised it was going to be easy, so with much tribulation shall he enter the kingdom. So we get these examples to show that. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. You know, if you really focus in on that, and don't let Satan sidetrack you. It makes things a lot easier in enduring the things that we have to go through. Here's what to consider with the words of, you know, here God calls Paul. This is very interesting. You consider the book of Job. Well, Job, you can go over and over and over and go, wow, just took a good man and made him so much better. But he really had to go through it, didn't he? Talk about the loss. How can we even compare? You can't. But ours just seems to be so overbearing sometimes. But now you look at these. And Paul was talking about these different ministers that are out there. And these same kind of things. He goes, verse 13, he says, for such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it's no great thing if his ministers all transfer themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose result will be according to their works. So he said, think about this. So he likens himself, he said in verse 23, I'm just like the rest of them. I'm no better than anybody else, except for the power that God gave to him and the truth that God gave to him. He says, are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Remember what they told Christ? Well, we're of Abraham's our father. And we've never been in bondage to anyone. Hello, you're in bondage to the Romans right now. I couldn't believe that when I read that. Where in the world was their minds? And today people can't see beyond the tip of their nose in our own country. This is happening. Are we watching this? Are we allowing it to carry us away? Or are we denoting? Are we discerning? And planting that in our heart so nothing will change that. Are they ministers of Christ? Verse 23, I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews 5 times, I received 40 stripes, minus one. Do you remember what happened there? The Jews prided themselves and were so arrogant, they say, well, what we're going to do, sometimes we might miscount in our stripes and our lashes, so we'll just save 39. That keeps us within the law. Oh, you guys are great. Thank you so much. You're only doing 39. 5 times he got lashed. 5. 3 times he's beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day that I spent in the deep. And as I mentioned before, I tried to think about that. Put myself in the issues without, you know, being on a ship with no coast guard. Nothing out there. You're just kind of holding on to a timber. Floating up and down. 3rd time. Is there something I'm not doing right here? What was going through his mind? But it didn't stop him, did it? He didn't say, I'm through, I'm done. He knew his strength came from God. And he was becoming stronger. It made him more relentless, you know that? Now, do our trials make us more relentless, or do they take us the other way? Do they take us to the point, guess what? I am not going to give in. I'm going to be stronger. And I know where that strength comes from. He said, in journeys often, verse 26, in perils of water, perils of robbers, perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils of the city, in perils of the wilderness, perils of the sea, perils among the brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, besides the other things which comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. Who is weak? And I'm not weak. He acknowledged he had his moments. Who was made to stumble? And I do not burn with indignation. If I must boast, I'll boast in the things which concern my infirmity. Because God would not heal him, remember? God said he appealed to him and said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to heal you. And sometimes with us, sometimes he says yes. Sometimes he says no. Sometimes he says, wait for a bit. I want to see how you deal with this. It's always for our purpose to make us stronger. Because he's such a merciful God. So he always attributed that to God. First, let's go to Romans chapter 1. Romans 1 verse 20. Paul sharing his life and his livelihood with those that he came into contact through his letters to try to help them to be stronger. Romans 1, verse 20, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead. How does he work? He developed the family, didn't he? He had the father, he had a mother, he had children. So he goes, if you see the family structure, so what does Satan do with the family structure? He tries to destroy it. By saying man can marry a man, a woman can marry a woman, and then how do you procreate? How do you get children? Well, if anybody stood back and thought sanely, they go, that doesn't seem to work. So I just took it another step. I was kind of thinking, seedless watermelons. How do you get more watermelon? Because what's going on with that? Mankind keeps changing everything, and it's never good. Whenever mankind says, I can do something a little bit better, hey, but these are drought-resistant tomatoes. Oh, great, I can't wait to sink my teeth into those. Because they're drought-resistant. You think those are better? I think that whatever man touches to what God made to be good is going to be less than good. Never better. That's the way I've always seen it. So once you're planted with that along the way, that doesn't change you. It doesn't change your mind. You just start to become smarter, wiser, more discerning, and you watch these things that come along. You learn how to speak. That's not always easy, as was brought up in the sermonette. Very difficult sometimes to convey your message so everyone will understand it and no one will take offense. How do I say this? How does God expect me to say this? How can I get through so the people can be stronger? And all these men did the same thing. They strove and realized their infirmities and their weaknesses, knew that they were no better or no greater than anybody else. Just they cared and they loved the people. And that was good enough for God because he says the rest is going to be the miracle. But he made them plow the course, had them plow the course, and they chose to go that way. The wrath of God, verse 18, is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because what they made known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it in them. His eternal Godhead. So they don't have any excuse. Verse 21 call also, they knew God. They did not glorify him as God, nor were they thankful. But they became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. You see back there where it says they weren't thankful? Let's make sure that we always thank God, even through our hardest of times, that we're just always in a thankful state of mind. That's why I'll say thank you. Thank you for the prayers. Because God was there. He was there for our campus this year. We've got another one, Camp Heritage. It looks like they're going to have the largest contingent. You know, Mr. Lord was kind of discouraged for a little bit because it had such small numbers. I think it was due to the timing of the date when school was starting. It was very difficult. They've got their largest contingent this year. We had our smallest at Camp Fort Bluff. But I told Mr. Schultz, I said, we had our largest at V-Teen. Do you know what that means? All those are going to go up through the teen camp. They'll be there. You know, how interesting that was to be there for the first staff meeting. And I'm looking at going, 95% of these staff went through Camp Chattahoochee. I know all these people. All these young girls are now young ladies. You know, the only depressing thing is it kind of makes you feel older. And especially when Mr. Winter confirms that I was the oldest there. Well, I never thought I would be the oldest anywhere. That's pretty humbling. But you know, we can smile, and we can be thankful. We can have all these wonderful things before God. You know, being a part of God's church and God's family does not mean we've got to walk around like this. Well, I had a staff member, Connor, from England, and so we did a skit, and I was, in discerning, I was supposed to be Moses, but I was kind of making it look like I was Noah. So I was talking to a couple of lions down there, and my assistant was actually my staff. We would walk straight like this. So I would take him around, and obviously the audience was trying to figure out what he was, and so I finally brought him up, and I said, by the way, when I announce you, start just rub my shoulders a little bit. So they're wondering, what's going on here? I go, this is my staff. He comforts me. And then Mrs. Duncan kind of said, well, who are you? What are you doing here? And I started using, I said, behold, I got us now the biggest headache from all these people. Now you start to pick it up. Where did this person get all this headache from all these people? And it's tearing me apart. And she had the Ten Commandments, so she said, well, take two tablets and call me in the morning. We had a lot of fun reading on a skit, trying to remember my lines, but we sure had an enjoyable time at camp learning about God's way. And that's what we're trying to help the young kids with, too. You can have a blast doing it God's way. You can actually play football and think about God. You really can. Thinking about God's ways, thinking about how you're treating somebody. Our campus learning, helping each other up, encouraging each other, taking that person that doesn't know how to play really well. The one that told me, he goes, I got buttery hands, I can't catch anything. So I called his name out, I said, hey, threw him the pass. And he caught it. I go, looks like the butter's gone. No more butter on those hands, is there? So he turned around, and again, everybody would be, I'm not the only one that was thinking of this. There's so many that have got this attitude now. We were about five yards from the end zone. I said, go to the end zone and just turn around. So we went to the end zone, he turned around, he caught it for a touchdown. Now he fell, and as he fell, the ball kind of broke loose. I said, no, that's in football, that would be a touchdown if you just put it over the end zone and catch it that way. Well, look at that. Not only did you catch it, but you got a touchdown for your team. I don't know if that's going to make, I hope it makes an impact. Can you imagine a touchdown changing somebody's life? Changing somebody's life. That's what that can do. You can have the people that come in there and go, I can't do this. And if you can. Another young girl, we all had different positions, and she was over there, she goes, I don't want to catch the ball. So don't throw it to me, please. And so I took the hike. And I had nobody else to pass it to. There she was. I go, here. And she caught it. And she was so excited, she ran and then threw it to somebody else, which nullified the play. You can't forward pass the other line of scrimmage. And I said, but you caught it. She was like surprised. I did, but I didn't know what to do with it after that. Well, let's teach you that too. You know, look what we're able to do. in these team camps by somebody that's not played something, not done this, they go, I ended up really enjoying that. I had a really good time with that. Yeah, that's all you got to do is try it. And now you're among people that are going to encourage you. You're not among people that are going to bring you down. You're going to lift you up. And yeah, is it challenging sometimes? Sure it is. It's not always easy. But we're going to be consistent with this. We're not going to teach anything but God's way in the way that He does that. And how did the brethren support that? By praying about that. By getting together with our kids and talking with them. How did it go? We are praying for you. How did your camp go this year? By praying for the next theme that comes out. Because that's all we're interested in. Every year, making this program better. That's all we're interested in every year, is making this congregation stronger. And seeing what we go through in the hardships, in the holes that we have sometimes in our heart. What do you think those do? As we endure, they just make us stronger. So sometimes we don't know what to say. The more you go through this, the more you start to realize a little bit more what you can and can't say. Because we're always going to be praying for them, that's for sure. You know, to give it some time, to understand that discerning, to have the discerning heart, God, what do I say? How do I say it? The more we go through the training, the more we'll have answers to be able to help people. But it won't be because of us. It will only be because of God's Holy Spirit within us. So as we plod through our lives with this in the future, watch. The Bible says watch. Watch what's going on around us. Have the discernment. Understand that these themes that we have in camp, they're not just for the teens. They're for the church as a whole. And I believe that God's inspired these. So we will have more discernment to see what's happening around us. What's going on? Am I strong? Am I talking about God? Am I thinking about God all the time? Am I being strengthened in the inner man by His Spirit? Because if you're not, we're coming against somebody that's a lot better than the Russians. A lot better than the Russians. But you know what? I think beyond that, our miracle awaits us. Can't wait for that. I cannot wait to see the people we've lost, our family, our fellowship, and all the others, the Abrahams, the Moseses, the Jacobs, all those at that celebration. I can imagine some of us just going like some of these characters. You know, it's just like, we're here. This is a miracle. Yeah, it is. It's a miracle. And now it's happened to you and I. We're going to rejoice in that celebration so much more than that. You know, that player, I don't think I told you about that. He can hardly move anymore. He got his reward. He got the gold medal. What lies ahead for him? I cried when I saw the interview. I saw the way he skated. Just so weak now. I see us. We're not getting any stronger. We're getting any weaker. We're getting weaker. But you know what? The miracle lies ahead for us. Can we taste it? Please. Pray to God and help. Ask Him to help us to really capture that vision so we can maintain our course. Never give up. And be as strong as anybody that came before us, so we can be able to cope with this and endure together as a family and as a church.